Hey everybody, it's Josh Rutledge, your co-host for Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to support us more, please head over to our website, fearscapepodcast.com. There you can click on store and browse some really awesome t-shirts and maybe pick a couple up, or even go to our Patreon page and see how you can support us monthly. We love bringing you awesome content just as much as you like listening to it. Enjoy the show.
Hello. I'm so glad you could join us. I hope you brought your blanket to hide under. The spooky crew is going to discuss things and events from other realms. Ghosts, cryptids, aliens. Be sure to hold your blanket extra tight as the boys take you deep into the Fearscape.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another frightening edition of Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. I am your host, Stefan Gearhart, and I am joined, as usual, by my reluctantly selfish... You're reluctantly selfish. Oh, friend, Josh Rutledge, welcome.
That implies that I'm still selfish. I'm just reluctant about it.
Yeah, exactly. You hate to be selfish.
I hate to be selfish, but I still do it.
You still do it. Boy, you're just reluctant to do it. So that's what happens when we improvise. We have a very interesting week of catching up to do. We were both on vacation last week. Boy, was it needed. I needed it big time. I got to meet my sister, which was very cool. Through a DNA test, I found out within the last few months that I have an older sister, so that was kind of neat.
Yep. It was really cool that, A, that you found that out, B, that you reached out and see that, like, y'all connected.
Oh, dude, I mean, she is a carbon cutout of me, but female, and we get along so well, and her kids are amazing.
I'm sorry for her, then.
Yeah, me too. it was so much fun, and, you know, you got some beach time. I got some Michigan beach time at a little pond.
Watch out for hypodermic needles.
Yeah. But what we're going to be doing this week is something different than usual. We're not going to be researching and talking about a paranormal topic in that regards that we normally do, but we're going to be researching and talking about our journey together so far.
Yeah, and when we say our journey, it's not necessarily our journey in doing this show. It's the kind of parallel journey that started right around the same time that I joined the show. But it's more of a almost spiritual in nature, along with, you know, that came along with doing the show.
So. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if you watched the show Supernatural, it's at this point it would say the story so far, and then carry on my wayward son. And then you would see this montage of everything that happened over the last 15 seasons, except for we're just going to do the show on the montage. So
right. We'll
get to that in a little bit, but we're going to talk to you guys about where we've been, the thing you've heard us talk about it throughout the show, experiences that we've had and the things that have been happening. It's crazy. And we're going to go into deep depth.
We're going to stitch it together like a paranormal quilt.
Yeah. Or at least we're going to try to.
Yeah.
But before we get to that, let's get into our first segment of the show, which is the psychic word of the week.
And now, the psychic word of the week.
So this week, our psychic phrase of the week comes from the Encyclopedic Psychic Dictionary by June Bletzer. Rest in peace, honey buns. We have flipped through the pages as usual, and where we stopped was in the letter S, and I looked down, and the phrase that caught my eye was slaying in the spirit.
Okay.
Without looking,
you're slaying it.
Yeah. I don't know, but it's not a sleigh ride. This is slay. And what immediately, without even reading the definition, is it just makes me think of those the Crusades. were slaying in the spirit, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't, you know, I was possessed by God.
Well, it makes me think of, girl, you slaying it.
You slaying it, girl. But here's what June Bletzer says about slaying in the spirit. And these all have, this has hyphens through the whole thing, so technically it's one word.
Okay.
Anyways, it says, to lightly touch the forehead of an individual with the first two fingers of the right hand and cause the individual to fall to the floor unharmed with the intention that he or she will receive a bolt of Holy Spirit energy. Performed by an evangelist at a charismatic meeting that is designed to stir the emotions of the members. Individual falls backward in a prone position, fully relaxed instantaneously with the touch. Workers help to ease the slain individuals to the floor as they are touched one after another. They lie on the floor until normal consciousness returns. Purpose is to receive a physical healing or a change in attitude. Not all who fall backward are healed. There is a theory that says that it is a group elemental that is built through loud, rhythmic music and emotional ploy from the leader beforehand, composed to put the group in unison of thought. Group's expectation and desire for the healings and falling backwards cause it to happen.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I think earlier today or maybe earlier this week, you and I were talking about the fact that what if the Holy Spirit, as it is related to it in Christianity, mm-hmm. is really just a group elemental? Because it seems like Holy Spirit is only really called on as being moving when it's around a large group of people that are kind of in unison, mm-hmm. you know, chanting or yep. whatever. So,
yeah, it, you know, and we were speaking with a theologian, and he, you know, we had talked about how if Jesus were to come back today, you know, would anyone recognize that it was Jesus? No, just like the Jews said no, I think Christians would do the same thing. And I said, what if it takes another God showing up, right, is what I told the theologian. Yeah. I said, what if it's another God? And he says, well, another God has already shown up. And I was like, oh, really? And I'm waiting for some yeah. joke or something. He said, the Holy Spirit. And to me, that's funny, but I mean, he legit yeah. means it. And if you think about that in terms of the Holy Trinity, I mean, that kind of makes sense because he does. He says, after Christ came back, he made way for the Holy Spirit to yeah. show up. And so that's just a short period of time for me. So that's why I don't say yeah. that was my biggest reason for saying no, was only because, like, dude, it was like 3 days. Come on. Like, can we have a couple hundred years before the new
right,
guy shows
exactly.
up? But I don't know. It's a very interesting theory, something I'd never heard before that I thought was very interesting. And but going back to that, to the slaying in the spirit, I'd never heard it called slaying in the spirit.
Yeah.
But it makes sense. I mean, you think of those Benny Hinn shows yeah. and stuff like that, like where he does. Boom, they fall down.
Right.
You're healed.
Right. I mean, I think we've talked about it before, that funny YouTube video of Ryu or whatever doing his thing, and then the people
yes.
fall backwards.
Ooh, ah, ooh, ah, ooh, ah. So. Yeah. Man, there's a whole Street Fighter thing with all the healings and all the different Street Fighter characters and stuff. It's so funny. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like, you know, I legit think some people were healed. I don't think that it was the power of God as much as I think it was the power of suggestion. You've got 100,000 people in this auditorium all believing and wanting you yeah. to get healed. If you know, believe in something like The Secret or something like that, imagine not only your want going out
right.
to the universe, but 100,000 people in an enclosed space. And in Wicca, we raise the cone of power. Well, here's 100,000
right.
people raising the cone of power. And thought, just thought alone could change that. So,
well, and something I've been reading a book about frequency and about how to change your own.
That's that movie with Dennis Quaid, right?
It's funny because
she got the novelization.
Because she talks about that movie in
oh,
the book.
Oh, does she?
Yeah.
It's a good movie. It's a good movie.
But she, you know, talks about raising your internal frequency to a higher level,
mm-hmm.
which would allow you to basically change your physical reality almost.
Yeah.
And one of the things that it talks about that those who can raise their frequency can often do is self-heal.
Yes. You know, I think if Santosh was on, he would say that as well, that a lot of those old Yu-Gi-Ohs, those
yeah.
yogis and gurus believe the same thing, and much Tibetan lore also believes that there is this new age idea as well, that is that changing your frequency. In fact, I mean, when I use Reiki, it is essentially about changing the frequency.
Yeah.
So I 100% agree with that. And I know both of us are... watching Ancient Civilizations on Gaia right now, and they yep. talked about the original Aeon or goddess, which was Sophia, and she was essentially a frequency.
Right. Like, right. Like, well, and it's the whole book, The Eighth Tower by John Keel, mm-hmm. is talking about those different frequencies and about how the ultra-terrestrial operates on a higher frequency yep. and they manipulate us with use of frequencies and all that kind of stuff. So anyways, all of that to be said, we got way off topic. But all of that...
Slaying in the spirit.
But all of that to be said, that if in the moment there's enough people in the room and the energy is right in the room, you could temporarily raise that frequency enough to self-heal.
Sure. I mean, that's why it's like, you know, I don't think thoughts and prayers help, but I bet you get 100 people in the same room doing thoughts and prayers at my...
Well, all prayer is positive intent.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you're putting that positive intent, that positive energy out into the universe for something to happen, why not?
And to lightly touch on what we're going to be talking about tonight in terms of synchronicities, here I flip to this random slaying in the spirit, and down at the bottom is Group Elemental, which we talked about a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
I mean, we would have hit that and been like, what's a group elemental?
Right. Right. We would have wondered. Right. Exactly. It came in the order it needed to.
How weird. Yeah. I mean, we legit are flipping through this and just finding, you know, anything so funny. But yeah, I'll shut up on that and we'll get moving on because I could talk about this all day.
Well, we will.
But yeah, I want to get into some spooky news. I got something kind of sci-fi-y to talk about.
Sci-fi-y?
Mm-hmm. Sci-fi-y. Ryuken! All right, so on this week's spooky news, like I said, I've got something a little sci-fi-ish. This comes from space.com. This is one of my faves. You know, all the cool astronomical stuff is on here.
Yep.
It says, mysterious blue fireball streaks above Western Australia, puzzling astronomers. Now, one of the reasons this stood out to me was that a few years back, myself and a few friends of mine went on a thing here in Louisville called Danger Run, where it's basically like a scavenger hunt, and it leads you to two different haunted houses. And
yep.
if you know, whoever has the less mile or the closest mileage wins some crap. I've never won, so I don't know.
Did you know that one year, Justin and I were like in the finalists?
Wow. A guy that I used to work with, a friend of mine, was the very first winner. But yeah, I didn't know that. But that's the first time I ever did it was back in the high school. We did it that, and then now, we do it almost every year for some friends of mine. But anyways, one of the times we were out, we saw this huge blue fireball that came down, and we were just, holy crap. And it turned out to be a meteor of some sort. It was all over the news and stuff like that. But that's why this grabbed me, because this says it puzzled astronomers. The one that we saw did not puzzle astronomers. And there is a video of it, as well as a picture you can see there. Just, you can see it, Josh.
Yep.
But I mean, it's just a blue streak essentially in the sky. But what it says here is that a streak of blue light flashed across the sky on Monday, surprised Western Australia's night owls and befuddled the astronomy community. God, I love the word befuddled. The blue fireball was seen at 1 a.m. local time on June 15th, according to ABC News. It was a really spectacular observation, Glenn Nagel, the education and outreach manager at the CSIRO NASA tracking station in Canberra, told the news agency. Sightings were reported across the remote region as well as in the country's northern territory and in South Australia, Nagel said. Many observers caught the phenomenon on video. The fireball streaks steadily across the sky. At first, it appears orange or yellow with a short tail streaming behind it. And then after a few seconds, the bulk of the fireball lights up blue. Now, scientists are not quite sure what object was burning up in the atmosphere to create the brilliant light show, according to ABC News. Some amateur astronomers speculated that the object could be human-made debris, perhaps from a recent rocket launch. But that seems unlikely, says Renee Sayers, a research ambassador at Curtin University's Space and Science Technology Center. A fireball flashes across the sky in Western Australia's remote Pilbara, they reference. And Sayers says, when space junk re-enters the atmosphere, what we tend to see is sort of like crackles and sparks. This is due to the fact that there's stuff burning up. So you've got solar panels going all over the place. You've got hunks of metal moving around. Now, the fireball seen in Western Australia, on the other hand, glided smoothly through the sky. That makes it more likely to be a natural space object. The blue color, according to Nagel, indicates a high iron content.
Yeah.
And many meteorites, space rocks that survive their fiery trip through Earth's atmosphere, are high in iron. Some may be the cores of ancient asteroids, even, according to the Natural History Museum in the UK. Now, Sayers said that the fireball looked similar to another spectacular meteor sighted in Australia in 2017, but even that fireball whooshed across the sky, and instead of hitting the ground or burning up in the atmosphere, it bounced back into space. Now, the June 15th fireball may have been another grazing encounter, but we may never know.
Hmm. When you were reading that story, it reminded me of, have you ever seen the movie The Right Stuff?
Yes.
So there's a scene where John Glenn is orbiting the Earth, and you see, I can't remember the two astronauts that are, you know, they're in Australia at the listening station.
Frickin' frack.
And there's this fire going, you know,
yeah.
And John Glenn reports that there are these swirling objects around his capsule. He can see them through the window. And all this was supposed to be while he was orbiting over Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually went and looked real quick, and I found, this is the quote that he said. He said, this is John Glenn, this is Friendship 7. I'll try to describe what I'm in here. I'm in a big mass of some very small particles that are brilliantly lit up. They're luminescent. I never saw anything like it. They were round a little. They're coming by the capsule. They look like little stars, a whole shower of them coming by.
Wow.
So it's just very cool that that happened over top of Australia, and then here they've got these two fireballs that come in over top of Australia.
Well, and even then, you know, there are many theories that the Aboriginals were the original people of the Earth.
Hmm.
And, you know, their origins and their myths and things like that speculate that as well. It's like, hey, we're coming home, or it's just like that movie, The Gods Must Be Crazy. It's just a Coke bottle coming down on an African tribe. but yeah, so very, very interesting. Not as spooky as spooky can be, but just the idea that they found no particles, they found nothing. Yeah. The astronomers looked, they couldn't figure out what it was. They're just assuming it's a meteorite.
But you know, I mean, I also wonder how much stuff really probably enters our atmosphere that we never see. We never see it, you know? So this is just, this happened to be one that we caught.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and it's funny because just the other day, yesterday or the day before, as we're recording here, was National Meteorite Day. And it was super cloudy and you couldn't see anything. And I was like, is it my father-in-law and I were like, does this happen at the same time every year, you know, or does this coincide with Placentes?
What are you talking about over there?
the meteor showers. There's like the Pleiades one and the Megantor one.
If you just mumble and change.
This is why I do the hosting mainly.
This is I'm going to take that approach on all the names that I have to read. In future,
just mumble it, man. or make up derogatory names instead of Placades, Placentas, whatever you want to do. But yeah, anyways, I'm going to stop that before it gets out of hand. You're welcome, blanket huggers, for my life. So let's move on and get into our next segment, which is the UFO sighting of the week. All right, Josh, what do we got this week from our resources of UFO sightings? What are we digging into?
All right, so this was actually in Buckeye, Arizona.
Ooh.
On Monday, June 8th.
Nice. So just a few weeks back.
Yep.
I was riding my bicycle while meditating on the act of inviting an intelligence that could potentially hear me from open communication and contact. I told them that I bring a message of love and peace and pure desire for understanding and learning. I acknowledge that they, whoever can hear me, will have say over how the communication happens. I was meditating on that really hard, and when I stopped my bike, I looked up, and there were multiple golden balls, points of light glittering in the sky. Some remained stationary, some moved around, and some of them seemed to jump across the sky. I was able to record some video. I have seen these several times before, and I'm happy to provide more information upon request.
Let's find this dude. Here's the funny thing. Is it's interesting that this coincides with our topic tonight, because this time last year, I would have laughed at the first part.
Yeah.
And now I'm doing that almost nightly.
Yeah.
I am also, you know, trying to change my frequency.
Right.
And trying to let them know, much like Indrid Cold would have, you know, or how Woody spoke to Indrid and yep. things like that. Like, I try to do the same thing, you know, because there is beginning to be so much more... I don't want to say evidence because the skeptics will be mad, but stories of this telepathic
yeah.
Sense of frequency in terms of speaking to them yeah. more so than just using your voice.
So something I watched on Gaia earlier this week or late last week is called First Contact.
Mm-hmm. I watched that as well through your recommendation.
And it follows or it's about a man named Daryl Anka.
Yep.
Who channels an interdimensional being that goes by the name Bashar. Although he explains that Bashar isn't really his name. It's more or less a title.
Yeah, a moniker that right. he used that he thinks because of his own, I believe, Persian background.
Yeah, or something, but either Persian or Arabic background. Yeah. But basically, that the word basically means messenger.
Yeah.
So anyways, all that to be said, it made me think of something that... that Bashar talked about in that, and I won't ruin it for anybody who wants to go to Gaia and check it out, because it's a great documentary.
Mm-hmm. Film. Which I would love to actually go see this.
Oh, yeah,
live.
To see him in person would be fantastic. If Daryl Anka or any of his people happen to be listening.
Yeah.
but so one of the things that Bashar says is that early on, his people had to encounter humans or work with humans to... He talks about why. I don't want to just spoil the fun for anybody, but he says in the early days, his people lacked emotion and they lacked compassion, mm-hmm. and so when they would interact with humans, often although they didn't mean it in a aggressive way, because they didn't understand how it would be perceived, abductions and a lot of those negativity things came about, and so he said. Now they've progressed to the point where people who were early abductees are now embracing
mm-hmm.
their contact with his people because they understand what their intention is.
Yeah, and we still think there are others that are still doing all of that. And in fact, he talks about coming from a different dimension, so the abductors here could be from our own dimension as well.
Yeah.
It's all very, very interesting. I highly recommend.
Just one of the... many great show. I mean, I have watched a lot of things. I know we have an ad for Gaia. don't get me wrong. This is not me trying to get you to get Gaia, but to be honestly, I've watched a number of programs on Gaia, and I have not found one that was disappointing.
Yeah, same. We've both watched the crap out of it. But what I wanted to mention was it's interesting because this is already going to be a lead in to our conversation, because it's interesting how. Some of the things that I'm now finding fit into ultra-terrestrials and ufology and things like that were things that as a New Age Wiccan pagan type person was already doing just differently. I was already channeling. I was already speaking to my higher self, my spirit guides. And it's like all I have to do is like when you're looking at a microscope and you flip the lens mm-hmm. to get the different view on it, that's what's happening here.
Yeah.
Is I'm able to flip the lens and go, oh... This is what I was doing. I just wasn't looking at it from this perspective.
Right.
And some of this makes more sense. Like, and well, I'll save it. We'll get into that. But yeah, I just wanted to say that. Yeah. That very, very interesting indeed. And I love that. I loved the guy's description of the glowing orbs, how some were stationary, yeah. some were moving around, some were bouncing.
Right.
Like, because we've seen reports before.
Oh, yeah.
Of these glowing like orbs, so Not Keith's type not, of orbs. Yeah. Orbs. Those are owls.
Right. So or dust particles.
Or bugs.
Yeah.
But yeah, very, very different because we're seeing these with our eyes, right? Right. But yeah. Ooh, lordy, man. All right.
So is that a good segue?
Yeah. Well, I want to get into Creepy Ketchup. Yeah, because I got a few things I want to talk about before we get into the long haul of Creepy Ketchup, essentially. But yeah, let's move quickly into Creepy Ketchup.
Creepy Ketchup. Y'all, it's creepy.
I'll move quickly so we can get into this.
Okay.
But it's just a very interesting week. Like I said, I spent some time with my sister. While I was there, my wife lost two friends within days of each other, or within a day of each other. I mean, back to back.
Sorry for that.
Yeah, I didn't know either of them, but we did go to one of the funerals because they also did the funeral the exact same time. So it was like flipping a coin, had to go to one.
Right.
While we were... So, you know, I've said this before. My wife is coming around to a lot of the stuff.
Yep.
But for the most part, she's pretty skeptical. And stuff doesn't usually happen to her, but while we were there, she pulls me aside and she's like, "Stefan, somebody just whispered into my ear." And I feel bad cause I can't remember what they said. It was something kind, whatever it was, but she was like, "Stefan, no one was around." Hmm. She was just like, "It was no one's voice in this house and it was directly in my ear." And she's like, "It gave her the willies." Like, it really spooked her, but in a good way.
Yeah.
We were going to be reading tarot. My other sister came into town, Trisha, so everybody knows about her. And so we were also going to do the Ouija board and things like that. We never ended up getting to the Ouija board because the tarot took forever. But Sarah's whole big thing was that she wanted to see who it was. Like, she was, like, so stoked to find out who it was.
Yeah.
And I asked her if she thought it was either one of her friends. She said no. She said she didn't think she knew who it was. And so she wondered if it was someone in the house. Now, where my sister lives is kind of like a neighborhood filled with kind of like really, really nice condo homes.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of old people. So, I mean, who knows? Could have been somebody who passed away. My sister's adopted dad died in 2001. He did show up. My sister can speak to spirits. He did show up during her tarot reading. So it's possible it was him. I mean, could be anything.
Or it honestly could have been a loved one of Sarah's that was trying to comfort her in her loss.
Yeah. And that's what I told her too. So, that was very interesting. That wasn't my thing, but that was definitely hers. But then, you know, like just being there, I mean, I had just all sorts of feelings and taps and pulls. Like my blanket got pulled off a couple times. I kept expecting her dog to be there. No, he was up or she was upstairs, you know, while I was sleeping and things like that. And then, of course, you know, I had a dream last night about Alan Greenfield, the author of the Complete Secret Cipher of the Euphonauts. And this is like the second or third dream I've had about him in the past 2 weeks. Now, granted, I just finished his book.
Yeah, he's fresh on your mind.
He's fresh on my mind. And I told you I kept seeing him everywhere. Like, if you've watched Hellier, you see this standard kind of, you know, middle-aged man, glasses, longish-ish kind of grayish hair, and kind of like those Hawaiian or bowling type shirts,
yeah,
you know. And like I've seen this dude everywhere. Like, I'm like, Alan? You know, like. And so he is definitely on my mind, and we've got a really cool announcement we'll bring up into our topic. But like, just very, very interesting. Just a heavy week full of light things, if that makes sense. I mean, it was daily. And then, of course, the second... So I've had a great week, though. Like, I mean, I have been, like, you know, I don't know how much I've shared this on here, but I suffer through ADHD and anxiety and depression and things like that, like a lot of us do. But this week, I mean, I was on cloud nine getting to meet my sister. Yeah. We were swimming, and we went to Ann Arbor, and I got to go to my favorite bookstore, and I found a really cool book that I just found referenced in Greenfield's book, which I'm laughing at because, like... It just grabbed my eye. I was like, oh, that's very interesting. And then, like, the very last chapter of Greenfield's book mentions that book. And I'm like, go figure. But anyways, yeah, so that happened. And then I get home. and my anxiety has been through the roof. Now, granted, work's been kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I chipped my tooth on Sunday. There's been some factors, but I don't know. I just makes me wonder if I need to cleanse my in-laws' home. You know?
Yeah. Like, have you not done that?
Not in a while. Not since they've been there. So yeah, I don't know. Really, really weird. Just a whole new weird feeling. And today was the first day that I felt better. So this is 4 days after I got back. Today was the first day I didn't have anxiety all day today.
Interesting.
Yeah. And work was just as crazy as it's been all week. So it wasn't like that changed. So yeah, I don't know. Just, I got a lot on my mind and, you know, like, and I don't know how much of that is just infiltrating, I guess, in a way. I mean, one sad thing is I was supposed to go to Europe, and now the U.S. has been barred from Europe, so now I don't think we're going, which just sucks because I really wanted to see my brother. But, you know, just a couple things, but at the same time, it's like today I have felt just amazing. Like, I don't know. It's just weird. So I don't know. I don't know maybe how creepy that is per se, but.
Well, and you're feeling amazing thing. I mean, you and I have both said that we look forward to this day every week.
Yeah.
To being able to do the show. And so maybe just knowing that you were going to get to do the show tonight was enough to
maybe
tip the scale.
Yeah, and the fact that I have a day off tomorrow.
Yeah. Well,
that's good. So too. I got a 3-day weekend.
Right.
I don't know.
Declaration Day is this weekend.
Yeah, so. It is. And so I don't know. It's interesting because my therapist, I had to change my time because I had another appointment that I double booked, and then I was like, okay, well, I can't do the next week because I'm going to be in Michigan. I was like, let's do next week. She's like, well, I'm going to be out of town. So it's been like, it's going to be like 3-4 weeks when I see her next week. Yeah. And I'm going to be like, get ready, honey. I got a lot to tell you.
So my creepy catch up, I just have two items, and they're really the same item that just happened over two different nights. So I have had every night some really crazy dreams that I don't really remember the next day. Like, I remember bits and pieces, but the bits and pieces that I remember are stupid. It's just like
they always are.
Has nothing to do with anything, you know, retrospective or anything. So, but one thing that I noticed last night and the night before is I went to bed with, so we on our bed we have the undersheet and then like a light blanket and then the comforter.
Okay.
And we keep our house pretty cold at night because we like to sleep when it's cold. So last night and the night before, or rather, I guess in the morning when I woke up to find that the comforter was off of me. Now, you know, it's not uncommon for me to kick the comforter off, but usually every other time that I've woken up hot and rolled the comforter back, I've always, like, I remember doing that. I remember waking up and moving the comforter.
Right.
And it's not like I threw it off my upper body. Like the entire comforter
it's not
is,
like you have my dog Kenobi pulling it off like he does to me.
No, I mean, it's like, I moved the entire comforter off of me.
Yeah.
Well, what's really crazy is the first night that it happened, I woke up at like 4 or something in the morning, and I realized that the comforter was off of me, and I had like this fleeting thought that I was abducted and placed back in my bed, and then they just kind of covered me up with the sheet and the blanket, but not the comforter.
Maybe you were slayed in the spirit.
Maybe I was.
And you got thrown back into the bed.
I was. Yeah.
That's interesting.
I don't know, but still, but that's the only two things, and it's again, it's just more or less the fact that I really for the last two nights I've almost blacked out, if you will.
Like it just
when I wake up in the morning, I have almost no memory of anything that happened. Like I usually toss it because I wear a CPAP when I sleep, and it's very uncomfortable.
Yes, I know.
And the hose gets
whenever
wrapped.
When I used to have to wear mine, somehow in the middle of every night, I took it off and didn't know it.
I mean, the hose gets wrapped everywhere. You know, I ended up like, you know. So anyways, so I
hashtag
usually
fat people problems.
Yeah. So I usually toss and turn and wake up several times throughout the night to readjust for how the hose and stuff is wearing for the mask. in the last two nights. I mean, it's like I've gone to sleep and I've woke up the next morning.
Interesting.
And nothing.
Sleeping hard. Those hard sleeps scare me. But it reminded me of two quick other things. First of all, I've been talking to Brad, of course, a lot. He's been having a lot of crazy stuff happen to him. And one I just wanted to share real quick. Sorry if you were planning on sending that in, Brad. But the other night he woke up with huge scratches along both sides of his arms. And he didn't even notice. His wife noticed it. Like, what the hell happened to you? And they're three. It's three scratches on each side. And he is freaking out. He sent me pictures of it and everything. He's, like, totally freaked out about it, especially because stuff that's been happening to him lately, which I won't ruin for anybody because he wants to send it in. But that was interesting. The other thing was, as I was talking to my mom, and you know how we were talking to Santosh about astral projection as well as abduction and things like that. They talk about how you get lifted up and you could fall back in, and that's how you wake up and you're like, ooh, and it feels like you just got dropped.
Right.
I was talking to my mom, and she told me that when I was really, really little, she said I used to come into her room all the time saying that I just fell, but I was on the bed. And that she had seen me a couple times as she'd walk by, she'd hear me go, ooh, and I would be bouncing.
Yeah.
Like... And you remember my story of possible abduction at that age. And I'm like, oh, shit. Right? Like, it was really weird to hear her say that because she was like, it happened a lot.
Well, but your story when you were abducted, like, you all disappeared, right? Like,
yeah.
You were missing.
Yeah. Yeah, we were missing. But I'm just saying, it's like, if that happened, were there other instances of it happening before or after? Because I don't know when, you know, time for that because I was... 3 to 5 years old.
Right.
But yeah, it was just very interesting that she said that to me, you know, because we had just recently had that conversation with Santosh and just, And I also in search of the one with, Zachary Quinto, the new version, not the Leonard Nimoy one. He meets this woman who has been abducted a million times and she wants him to feel what it feels like to get abducted. And that's she referenced it the exact same way and had him do this like weightless lift and all this. It was crazy. But yeah, anyways, those were two random quick things I wanted to throw in there real quick before we get moving on. So let's move on because I'm ready to get talking.
Okay.
So we're going to get into our topic this week, which is, of course, our journey so far.
Hey everyone, Josh here. Do you feel like mainstream options for things such as yoga, meditation, or documentaries and films meant to expand your mind are lacking? Have you heard of Gaia? Gaia is the largest resource of consciousness-expanding videos. Both Stefan and I have watched several of the series, documentaries, and films available on topics such as the Secret Space Program, channeling interdimensional beings, and alien encounters. We're just now exploring the over 8,000 films, shows, and classes available to stream on your favorite devices. To get your 10-day free trial of Gaia, go to fearscapepodcast.com/Gaia offer. Again, that's fearscapepodcast.com/GAIA offer.
Okay, so yeah, here we are.
And I was thinking about it. It's almost been a year, I think, since it started.
Yeah, it's getting damn close.
Yeah.
And I just want to say thank you to our listeners for being interested in our stories. A lot of the feedback that we get from folks is their interest in our stories. People love creepy catch up. Probably more than any other segment.
Yep.
Just the fact that we have so much of it, which is great because, I mean, there's weeks we don't. I mean, we do not force this issue. I mean, it just stuff happens.
Sometimes we have dry spells and sometimes we have crazy stuff.
Yeah. like last week, it's like I had a light but heavy week. It was just nothing really big to talk about, but there was a lot of little things, right? So it's like...
It was a light flow.
But yeah, thank you guys for always listening and being intrigued. But yeah, some of you did ask, especially some newer listeners asking, what's the whole story here? Like, how did you get to where you are? Because we don't share everything on this podcast. We forget sometimes that what we've talked about didn't happen while we were recording.
Right.
So there's a lot of gaps.
Well, and also I think that, at least for me, I'm looking forward to really, like I said early on, to kind of trying to stitch it all together. Because I do remember a lot of things that have happened. But you're right. I don't remember what we've talked about, what we've shared, what we've kept internal. So, yeah, it's a really good, almost like a roadmap for how we have gotten to where we are.
And the funny part is like, I feel like we've only, like, scratched the surface. And that's telling with the fact that I'm about to live on the other side of the country, how I still feel like we've only scratched the surface, that bigger things are about to happen, even with us in separate places.
Well, and as we'll see as we start talking through these things, I really feel like it, each time that something has happened, it has built upon itself.
Yes. And just this, I mean, I hate to reference, but I mean, Hellyer did not create the term synchronicities. And I mean, I've read it in every single damn book we've been reading.
Right.
But the synchronicities have been insane. Like, between the books we're reading, the docs we're watching, the conversations we're having with us, with Santosh, with everybody, and then our guests coming on and having things that are expanding on the things we didn't even tell anybody about.
Right.
It's just mind-blowing.
Yeah. Oh, just, you know, like the theories that even just you and I share. Like, yes. We're in Messenger all day talking about things and stuff. And the theories that you and I share that no one else knows about, those theories. And then we watch a documentary or something, and they're talking about the same
same thing. Or we're reading a book
that was written 50 years ago.
Or a book that was, like, barely published.
Right.
With the same thoughts and the same ideas that just feed that narrative for us. And I try not to have a singular lens on things, but that's the interesting thing, is there are many lenses, but they're all pointing towards the same thing.
Yeah.
That's what's crazy. Like, we're coming at it from a UFO perspective, an ultra-terrestrial perspective, a religious perspective, a spiritual perspective, a pagan perspective, an occult perspective, all these different perspectives, and they're all like...
They're all lining up.
They're all lining up, which was itself a sort of theory we had towards the beginning, that all supernatural, paranormal things are related.
Right.
Right? And it's just, whew.
So let's take a look at kind of, as we started to prepare for this episode, I sat down and made a little document of kind of where I think things started in this journey. And I don't want to diminish the fact that you have been on this journey for a long time. I have been on a similar, yet probably not as acknowledged, journey for a long time. But it only seems to be that once we're on the journey together, that things really started to click into place.
And it's interesting because, Santosh and I have been friends just a few years shorter than you and I have been friends. But pagan-wise, him and I have been friends almost since the get-go. And him and I have always joked that our lives are very parallel, even though they are different. But because we're into a lot of the same stuff, there's parallel things that happen. And I think some of that fits into that group mind. And even improv feeds into this, right? This idea of group mind. But in a lot of ways, I feel like your track just curved in between our tracks too, because now even Santosh is like, Josh, dude, this is what we're going through. And it's like, you're just a train car behind on some things. And it's interesting for Santosh and I to go, gosh, these were things that we felt when we were actually, all of us were at Campbellsville. But we put into our pockets, because we didn't have the understanding nor the experience to understand what was going on. And it's like, when your train showed up, it emptied those pockets out for Santosh and I. And we were like, so that's what this meant. And then, there's this wizened old man that both Santosh and I are, as we look at you going, oh, remember when we first felt this way? And I mean, it's like puppy love, when you first get into it, everything is like, holy crap, I swear I just felt somebody touch my shoulder. And it's the most amazing thing, because you get to a point where you're like, yeah, I just had another thing touch my shoulder, man. It was, and it's like, you forget. But then it's like, these you jumping on this middle track, it's like, it opened these doors, and then this podcast, and then just everything, and a lot of it, had to do with John Keel and Hellyer, but it started even before then.
Yeah, so I think for me, I track it back to the dream that I had before I recorded the first episode with you. So we recorded the first episode, I believe, at the end of August, mm-hmm. which actually aired on September 11th. And so probably the week before, so 2 weeks before it aired, I'd had a dream, which I shared in the mm-hmm. in the Getting Spooky with Josh, you know, kind of episode, the new co-host right. episode. And, you know, and for those who may not have gone back and listened or who are new to the show, so in that dream, I was standing in the field in my grandparents' farm in Shelby County, Kentucky, and there was an entity, like, standing next to me, and I was, in comparison to the entity, I was small. So I interpreted that as being I was a child. Mm-hmm. And then when I looked up in the sky, there was, like, a triangular craft kind of partially blocking out the sun, and the entity spoke to me, although not with their mouth, and said, you know, that I was a hybrid and I was going to have some medical problems because of that, and so on and so forth. And so then I woke up and, like I said, then we did the show. And so for me, that was kind of the first starting point of all this kind of stuff kicking off.
Well, it's like when I read tarot, one of the things that I do in the spread that I do is one of the first cards we read is the past. And the past I always reference as being the root cause, the root that affects the rest of the reading. That this happened in the past and this is why everything is leading that way. And that's what this was for you. This was the root. If I were to read you, I would say that was the root that led to everything else, yeah. and is leading to everything else.
So one of the other things I'm reading this book right now by Penny Pieter or something like that. I can't remember her last name, but it's all about changing your frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that she says is that as you start to shift towards raising your frequency, you'll start to encounter things because you're changing yourself. You're changing your physical nature. And some of the things that you'll encounter is that you'll have repressed memories will come to light.
Yes.
You could potentially have spikes in where you previously didn't have much ADD or ADHD. Mm-hmm. It could all of a sudden start to present itself. You could have...
Look what happened to me.
Where you didn't have... depression maybe so much before, now all of a sudden it starts to present itself, so, you know, anxiety and all that kind of stuff. And it's just really interesting that perhaps before we even started on the path, I had in my mind committed to being on the path, and so therefore the changes in myself had started, the changes in my frequency yeah. had started, which brought forth this potential of a suppressed memory, which is really what it felt like. It didn't feel like a dream. It felt like something that I had experienced, which I had forgotten, and that now I was remembering.
The way I've had dreams like that, and the way I say that it feels like, as if it is as if you are standing in a picture in a newspaper in a Harry Potter world. Like, that's the way it has always felt like to me. It's like, because things are moving, but they're also stuck, right? It's yeah. like, it's this frozen moment that moves.
Well, in that dream, I was myself.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a lot of times that I have dreams, I have had dreams like that in the past where I feel like I'm witnessing an event, but I'm usually witnessing it from a third-person perspective. Like, mm-hmm. I see myself doing whatever. This was very much I was myself doing this activity. Yeah. So.
And to pull back a little bit, for me, you know, when Brad and I started this show, both of us, Brad first, and you know, and I'm a big believer that I'm really digging this term frequency. It's like, so if your frequency is already open, right, someone else's experience can reopen it, so to speak, and push things in your general direction.
Yeah.
Because Brad came onto the show and had some very, very interesting night hags, which is where Creepy Ketchup came from. was this whole idea, because they were one after another for a while. Mm. And all of a sudden, I hadn't had night hags in quite some time. And all of a sudden, I was getting them again. But our show was focused mainly on ghosts and poltergeists and those things. And then I don't remember how it happened, but we read something, or Brad and one of his night visions there, we established that it could have been extraterrestrial. Hmm. That there was some theory in the fact that it might be extraterrestrial, because I think he saw himself on like a surgical table or something along those lines. I can't remember. And then we started kind of looking towards that, and this whole idea of extraterrestrials started kind of to be put onto the forefront for me. I think Brad backed off of it a hair. He had some other things that were happening and things like that. But I know that by the time you came on board, I was starting to already move in that direction, which was interesting for the dream you had the week before. Right? It's just that synchronicity, you know, yeah. and that to me was my starting point, was the night hags for me, and this idea that it might be extraterrestrial related, or now maybe UT related,
right?
That kind of started me on the path, and then I discovered Hellier and so yep. on. But we had other things that happened first. Yeah. So one of the very first things that we did when you came on board was we investigated the place that I do improv all the time, the Shakespeare pub called the Bardstown,
right?
Which is a play on the words, because there's a road called Bardstown Road that leads to the city of Bardstown. And so since it was on Bardstown Road, he's a big Shakespeare fan,
right?
Thus the Bardstown.
Right.
Brilliant. I love plays on words. He's a theater guy. Love it. Love you, Doug Shetty. But he gave us permission to go do that. And in fact, we were supposed to have like two or three other people join us, and they bailed at the last minute, including you, Brad, calling you out, bailed on us at the last minute. And that's okay, because I think everyone that was supposed to be there was supposed to be there, except for Mitch, because he slept the whole time.
Well, he was there.
He was there. Love you, Mitch. But it was us, it was Naoma, it was Mitch, and Clint Parks.
Clint, yep.
Clint was great. I really like Clint.
Yep.
Some interesting things happen. I'll let you start with yours, because mine gets a little deeper.
So, I mean, for me, most of that evening was uneventful.
Yeah, because at that point, you've never really had any ghosty experiences or anything
other than what I had at my grandparents' farm.
Right.
You know, and I had that group in that did an investigation there. And the whole time I thought, you know, this is a joke.
Yeah.
Well, they had like 20 people. Like, how do you do an investigation
with
20 people? But anyways, up until that point, you know, number one, I had not a lot of experience. And number two, I didn't know what to expect. And so the other thing that I had started to do with at that point in time was experiment with my own internal energy.
Forgot about that.
So, you know, at one point in time, you and I were sitting in the attic. All the lights were off. We're trying to do
attic. First of all, didn't even know that attic existed. I've been performing there for 10 years, and I didn't even know there was a door that went up there. Creeped me out.
But we were trying to do that attic and trying to do some EVPs and you were like, you were saying we're seeing something moving over by the furnace. And I honestly started getting like really freaked out.
Yeah, you did.
So I internally started generating like this the whitest light that I could think of. And then you're like, man, I don't know what happened. All the activity dropped off. And so I was like, well, I started generating all this white light. Like, oh, that's what it did. You killed it. So,
because one of the things that I learned from a non-skeptical ghost hunter was to trust what you're seeing, because if you don't question it and you trust it, you're manifesting it and you're giving it energy and it's going to grow. And that's what I've always done. And Naoma, I swear to God, her and I have been siblings in another life. Like, I mean, she believes the same thing. And it's like, you get up there and you have to just trust what you see, because there's nothing else you can do. Right. And that's what it is. And then you start to feel it. You can see it in your mind, and you just go for it. But yeah, I mean, there was rustling. There was all sorts of stuff. And even Naoma and them had an instance. Yeah. Naoma and I, all, both together, we had an instance up in the attic. I mean, the attic was spooky, ooky.
But, I mean, you know, I think that we got a feeling at that location, or at least you and Naoma got a feeling that there was at least maybe a woman, a small, like, maybe child mm-hmm. or something, and then a guy who, you know, was not a nice guy.
No, not at all. And Naoma, interestingly enough, Naoma and I came up with that separately, which was very creepy. But, yeah, it was really, really interesting. And we had a cool instance in the green room back there, just some stuff, you know, going on during that.
Yep.
We were using a ghost hunting tool that had some interesting results. I don't remember all this. Go back and listen to the episode.
yeah.
But what was really, really interesting was later on, I felt this urge to channel. And looking back on it, it's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
We felt something was up. We felt something was going on with this woman as if she was trapped, that there was this possibility that this child was hers and he was stuck and that they couldn't get to the light and that they were being held down essentially by this man. And, but we couldn't get the correct information. And I couldn't stop it. I ran to the Ouija board, which we hadn't touched that night, and I began channeling. And it wasn't your normal channeling. I didn't invoke, I didn't trance and become them, but my hands were her hands.
Yeah.
And it was moving so fast. I've never Ouija'd by myself. Like, that's not a thing I've ever done. And it was moving so fast. And I knew they were the right words because they were popping in my head before I would see them spelled out.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, God, Joshua's going to think I'm a freaking weirdo. But I couldn't stop.
And see, that whole time, so I had picked up, because we had some dowsing rods, mm-hmm. right? And they were the kind that, like, the part that you hold on to is separate from the part that turns. And so it's like I'm sitting there holding these. And they cross, like, directly in front of me. I get these cold chills all over my body. You know, at certain points of time, like, my name came up in the conversation. So I start, like, internalizing, picturing this white light and, you know, that kind of stuff. And I mean, it was just a very, for lack of a better term, eye-opening experience for me.
And what's interesting is that whatever Naoma, myself, and you, and maybe Clint, and maybe Mitch is snoring, but whatever we did, felt like we were able to get the woman and her child to move to the light and be free of this man. Because Doug has said he has not seen the visage of the female who he would see on the camera all the time. That's who he would smell her perfume and all. Has not seen that. But the man has still been there. And so that was very telling. That what we did worked. Yeah,
right.
So that
for me was, so if I look at the dream and the starting of the show as like a opening the door, right? Then that experience was almost like an affirmation that I was in the right place. I was moving on the right path.
And much like I always say, it's like once you turn on the supernatural muscle in your brain, you don't turn it off.
Yeah.
You might be able to put a blanket over it, but you don't turn it off. And a lot of times that door gets pushed open even more so, which is what I think happened. I mean, you know, we could talk about what next is when I saw the creature, the cryptid, in your backyard.
Yeah, which I really wish that, you know, part of me wishes that I would have been out there to try to see what you would have seen. But, first of all, I don't know that I could have seen it because that's still something that I have not had happen. I have not seen an apparition. I have not seen any. Like, I've seen the effects. I've had feelings, but I've not seen it. And so, you know, something that Santosh has talked to me about before is having my inner eye versus my outer eye. So, like, being able to see it even though I can't physically see, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And so I wonder even if you saw it not with your physical eye, but with your
and I've said that it's like sometimes you have to trust the image in your third eye, like you have to trust that image But no, what I, what I mean, I ran to my car. it scared me. And now the skeptic in me, of course, says it could have just been a deer. Deer tend to, can occasionally stand on their hind legs, but to just stand there for a while.
And watch you. And turn its head.
And turn its head. And it had long, I believe it had multiple sets of arms. It wasn't just,
yeah,
you know, but they were very long. And I just remember the deep glowing eyes and the antlers. And it just reminded me so much of some sort of Washu guy or Wendigo.
I mean, I've never asked you to do it, but I would love it if you could, like, I mean, draw it.
That one picture I sent you that one time that, yeah, we have not been able to find since because it disappeared was exactly what I saw.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the best description of what I saw. Like, and even then, it was mostly silhouetted, so right. Who knows?
Right.
Who knows? All I know is it was enough to scare me. And maybe I was looking for it, because at that point, you thought you had seen something or thought something was, yeah, in that forest line. You know, maybe that opened up my eye for me to see. I don't know. I haven't seen it since, and we've been back there. I don't see any hoof prints. I don't.
Yeah. We often don't sit with our backs to the woods, but.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know. But I know that, like I said, this just started opening doors to things. And I think around this point is right around when we finally watched Hellier. Well, yeah. I watched it first.
You watched it first. You're like, Josh, you got to watch this. And I finally got around to watching it. And I watched, I mean, I think I binged the first season over like 2 days.
Yeah, you moved on quick.
And then the second season, watched it really fast. Went back, watched it again with my wife. Because mm-hmm. I am like you. I'm trying to, you know, bring her into the fold, if you will, with your wife.
Yeah.
Sounds
like we're swingers. Trying to bring her in the fold, man.
But, yeah, so watched it. I mean, I've even watched a few episodes here and there, bits and pieces again, to try to pick up on things that maybe I didn't pick up on the first go around.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think that watching Hellier really, well, so here I'm thinking about it now, and I don't know how much. I don't know how much I actually got out of Hellier other than maybe the some contributing information to some of my theories and that it turned me on to John Keel.
Yes, and that's exactly what I was going to say. Hellier itself was amazing. We've had our own conversations, and you can listen to our episode on Hellier, even though our opinions have changed on some of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's exactly what it did for me is that it opened the doors to our research.
Yeah.
Is essentially what it did, because immediately we were like, oh, yeah, John Keel, I've never read the Mothman Prophecies. Maybe now's a good time.
Yeah.
Because we were like, oh, well, we need to eventually do an episode on Mothman and Indrid Cold and stuff like that. So we're like, cool, let's check it out. And then, I mean, and to me, it was truly at the end of the day, it was John Keel. That, yeah, that opened, because that referenced so many things.
Oh, yeah.
My only reference at that point was the movie,
right,
which is
like a small part of what.
Good Lord.
The book
and just
contains.
the way they portrayed Indrid Cold, it was just,
yeah,
whatever. But yeah, that was my, so I had no idea it was this nonfiction,
yeah,
like, I mean, it, study.
And really for me, if I have to think about the progression of things, reading Mothman Prophecies and finishing it, and then the things that occurred for me after that was like a springboard. I mean,
yeah,
it just pushed me to, like, so let's assume I was on level one. Now I'm like level three. Like, I jumped a whole,
yeah,
whole
and level. We were like, Santosh, watch Hellier.
Yeah.
And he binged it in like 2 days, both, yeah, series, both seasons. And all of a sudden he's on board. He's reading the books,
right,
with us, all the Keel books. And of course the Alan Greenfield episode.
Right.
That changed everything for me in Hellier, because that's when I got a renewed interest in numerology and the occult.
Yeah.
And that's when I first started getting my first inklings into the occult having to do with extraterrestrials, or the term we learned, ultra-terrestrials.
Right.
And just crazy. And so we ended up buying Greenfield's book, and I tore through that, and and then we read Woody Derenberger's Visitors from Lanulos, yeah. Like, and seeing how that, and I just bought Gray Barker's book, The Silver Bridge, so I'm anxious to read his account on everything that happened in Point Pleasant.
Well, you know, and it's my reading of Kiel's Mothman prophecies that leads me to believe that the Mothman was not a cryptid.
Oh yeah, I'm 100% with you on that. And anyone that reads that book and comes out thinking that it's a cryptid did not read that
book. Yeah, they watched the movie.
Yeah, and that tells me all you've ever done is just read your own lore or watch the movie. Even we, you know, listener out there, I know you're out there. It's like you even kind of getting mad at Josh saying it was a cryptid. There's you know, tracks, there's things, and blah 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 blah. I still feel like our theory fits our theory. I mean, it still could be a man in a spacesuit that needs to eat, that needs to,
right.
You know, like, right. It still have tracks.
It'll be interesting to see if Gray Barker's account describes Mothman differently.
Yeah, I'm very interested. Though I know him and Kiel were BFFs.
Right.
As was Derenberger. So I read this. So I just recently got his daughter Tanya's book, Beyond Lanulos. Which is a follow-up. It's Beyond Lanulos, Our 50 Years with Indrid Cold. And there really wasn't a whole lot of new information, though it did talk about stuff that happened after the book, his book came out and stuff like that. But one of the interesting things in the book was, and I had read this somewhere, was that Gray Barker originally was supposed to be the editor of the book. He was taking his time because there was so much great information that Woody had given him. That he loved it. The original, and they talk about it, the original manuscript is gone. It's lost to time. And apparently, it went way deeper. And then when Herbert, whatever his name is, because Woody got impatient, because at that point he had lost his job, and so he wanted this book deal. I don't blame him. He wanted this book deal to help provide for his family. Yep. And so he fired Gray and moved to this other guy, and this guy shredded his stuff and added his own information, essentially, you know, like they did to the Bible and stuff like that. It's like added his own information because he thought it was too fantastical, so he brought it back down. And if you've read the book,
it's pretty fantastic.
It's pretty fantastical. Yes. So I'm kind of concerned at, like, how fantastical
what was it?
Was it? But yeah, it's like he got rid of that, and Gray has even said, it was phenomenal, the information that Woody had.
Well, it talks about, you know, and I don't want to get too far off topic here, but it talks about in Visitors of Lanulos that, you know, they talk about how they communicate telepathically, and Indrid says, oh, it's so easy, I'll tell you how. It makes me wonder if in the original manuscript it tells you how to do
it. Yeah, stuff like that, because there was also the editor also didn't want to incite panic. He was one of those.
Yeah.
So he also cut things out that he thought would incite panic. But what's really interesting, just to wrap up Beyond Lanulos, it's a very, very short book. I read it in an hour.
Yeah.
It was very, very short for being $15. Is she talks about, now we know on Hellier, this book came out before Hellier, but on Hellier she says that Indra Cold had passed away. But before that, in this book, she talks about that Carl Ardo and Demo and Indrid and his kids and all of them are on Facebook, and they have accounts for those that are in the know, and that they are on social media. And she talks about how Indrid had become old, and his kid was now a father that had three kids and was in charge of the going out and doing. It was just very, very interesting for her to share. Where they all, like, MTV or VH1's, where are they now?
Yeah, right. So, a little thought bubbles are popping. Bloop, bloop.
Yeah, bloop, 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 bloop. Pop up video, man. But yeah, it was very, very interesting. And yeah, so Hellier just, it just opened that floodgate to John Kiel.
To really, and Hellier definitely, I would say that after watching Hellier, we were both really passionate about the documentary. Mm-hmm. We wanted to get involved somehow. You know, it really inspired us to want to learn more, to seek more information.
I mean, Greg and Dana, I'm sorry how many times we reached out to you. Sorry you didn't respond back, but man, we reached out to you. But yeah, we were so passionate, which we've seen. So is everybody else that watches it.
Right.
It is very telling. about how they approach this documentary so differently than most paranormal docs.
Yep. And one of the things that that actually came out of it, like you say, is our interest in Kiel. And also the overall, our own theories now involve cave-dwelling UTs.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, and, yeah, I will say, post-Hellier now, post the first review, things have changed for me. I definitely feel like they were off topic when it came to the pan. I think that was a road and this is coming from a pagan. I think that went off in the wrong direction. I think, Carl, right, is the,
Carl's the filmmaker.
So what's the other guy's name?
I don't know.
You know who I'm talking about, though.
Yes. The guy that figured out all the numbers.
Yes. Him heading towards that route is where I think it should have been. And it's interesting because I spoke to Brad. He watched Hellier. He didn't really like it because of the whole numbers stuff. He's like, that's when he thought it got stupid. But that's actually when I thought it got interesting. Yeah. And then reading Alan Greenfield's book.
Yeah.
And how good Lord has that opened up more doors, which we'll get to.
You know, in not to get too far off topic, but the even now thinking back to the original emails that sparked Hellier, the right. David Christie email,
right.
I'm really curious if that was a telling of events or if that was meant to trigger, like if that was meant to trigger some activity.
Sure. Almost like a secret word that triggers your brain, you know,
right.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, who knows?
And and today even I speculated with you that Hellier was a call for initiates.
Yeah. Well, especially if you talk to Greenfield for sure. But it's like, yeah, because really at the end of the day, the whole purpose of Hellier is only like 1% of where it went.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they were trying. The first season really tried to dwell on that, but that's not what it was all about.
No.
And especially Terry Rist and all of the things that happened post that, which are the things that are happening to us.
Right.
Right? It's like those are the things that are happening to us, including one of the things we got from Hellier that I will say we would not have gotten without Hellier was the Estes sessions that we have done on our own,
which, you know, the whole premise behind the Estes method is really just to cut off your other senses.
Yeah, it's actually like a combination of two things. So it's a combination of using a ghost box or a radio hack, where it's just scanning through the radio stations, and most ghost hunters do this. But it's also cutting off all of your senses and just trusting what's in your brain. Yep. A lot of psychics will do this, for people to show them, hey, I can't hear or see you because you're getting noise canceling headphones and you're getting blindfolded. So all you have is essentially your smell, your taste, your touch, and your thoughts.
Yep.
And that's what this does, but it combines the two. So instead of just noise cancellation headphones, you're also being fed a ghost box.
Right.
And we, get-go, have had interest. And we were like, whoa, we're by Waverly Hills.
Yeah.
Let's go up to Waverly Hills, right. Which, of course, was right at the start of the pandemic. So we couldn't get up there.
No.
But we parked right in front of the gate.
Got to the gate. We had some really interesting, I would say really interesting ghost related, contact on the Estes, on those sessions, at least at that location. But really my takeaway, from that night more than the Estes sessions was Capella.
Capella, I was going to say that too, was our first, combined UFO sighting.
Yeah. Which, you know, we know that it was in the same spot as Capella the Star, but man, it was all over the place. And you had that video of it, you know, just all of a sudden darting to the right. And I mean, a star wouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. So it had to have been something trying to communicate with us.
With us, yeah, right. Because it blinked, it moved, it shifted, and it we were both
zigzagged.
And there was no other stars doing that.
No.
So if it was a trick of the eye, why weren't other stars doing that,
right,
or similar colored or similar sized?
Well, and we both saw it at like the same time.
Yeah.
I was like, dude, do you see that? And then you looked, and then we just stood there and watched it forever.
And right, and we looked it up that it was where the location was the star Capella. But then as we started doing more research, we found stories of people who say that ETs will tend to park in front of a star,
right,
because they know the mathematical distance, so that it looks like from Earth as if it is the star, right?
Right.
It's in a way a kind of cloaking,
right?
And I think that's
hiding in plain sight.
Yeah, hiding in plain sight. And I think that that's what it was that first night. But then those Estes sessions that we had were crazy too.
Yeah. I mean, from a ghost perspective, we were definitely picking up on a lot of activity that was there.
Oh, yeah, especially from Waverly. We had, you know, the maintenance person.
Right.
You know, or the...
Or whatever.
Whatever.
It
it's been so long now, it's hard to remember.
Some of those sessions are on YouTube, though, in case anybody is listening to it.
Yes, please do check that out. Yeah, the ones we had in the car where we did try to speak to the ET. We were trying to say, hey...
Right.
Can you squeeze in? And I believe at one point you shifted into that ET on yours and then shifted into my grandmother, if you'll recall.
Yeah, yeah, because you had a pretty emotional...
yeah, yeah, my grandmother definitely showed up. But from that point on, I mean, it's like we kind of got addicted to doing Estes sessions.
Oh, yeah, well, I think every time we've gotten together, aside from getting together to record for the show, we've done a session.
Yeah, and we've now not every single Estes session, especially when we've done like 20 back to back, like we did that one night. Yeah, they're not always great.
No,
but man, there has been some, and I know you guys are gonna say bull hockey, but I swear to God, the best ones we've ever had were the ones where we were like, eh, it hasn't been happening lately. Let's not record it.
Yeah, like the nights that we saw the UFOs. So.
Yeah, UFOs, yeah. People.
So which that's. Further in the timeline, so
yeah.
So let's jump back to a little bit of the timeline. So after we saw Capella, you had your crazy Indrid cold dream in the park.
Yeah. So it was precursored by a feeling to just go in the park. So
yeah, that's right. You were out driving, right?
Yeah, I'm out driving around because quarantine had just kind of started. So work was, you know, most people weren't going to work. Our classes got cut, things like that. So I was just out of my mind. So I would just go drive around. And, I live over by, Waverly Park, which is in an old section of the Waverly Hills property. It's not Waverly Hills property anymore, but it used to be. And, anyways, I go up there and I just feel this urge. I mean, it's like 10, 11 o'clock at night. It's spooky as hell. I'm like, all right, let's go. So I get up there and I mean, second I turn in, my heater blows. It's cold. I'm freezing. I'm trying to get up there. I see like entities cross. I'm thinking I'm seeing like entities or apparitions crossing
in
the road.
Yeah.
At one point I saw what looked like a patient standing on a hill, in a white gown that creeped me out and all that stuff. And I go all the way down and, I stop at like this playground that's there and all this jazz and I'm just freaked out. And so I leave.
Well, the headlights follow you out.
Oh, yeah. And so I have these headlights that follow me, but there was no one there.
Yeah.
Like, there was no one that could have followed me because I went all the way down. There was no car. And it's a dead end. So there's only one way in and one way out.
Right.
And I went all the way to the end and turned around. And at some point, there were headlights behind me. And as I get to the end... Like the last turn, headlights disappear, and there was nothing there.
Yeah, so I mean, I think you went back in to try to find.
Yeah, I went back in real quick, didn't see anything, and got super spooked out. And the first place I could turn around, I turned back around, and the second I left the park and back onto Arnoldtown Road, my heat kicked back on. And that night, because I told you guys what I told you in Santosh, I was like, "Oh my God, this happened!"
Right.
And then that night, I have this crazy dream. That, and you know, it's on one of our episodes, but it's like I go down there and I'm in the playground and there's like the swings are swinging on their own and it's like I'm freaked out. And then I see it was the Mothman.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm sitting on those swings, and the Mothman comes down and removes, like, his face mask. It turned out to be Andrew Cold, the big smile, the whole nine yards. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, but who are you really? Or something along those lines. And then his face phases into your face, Josh, and it becomes you, that you were like, I'm Andrew Cold or something. I can't remember because I don't have a memory like you. But, yeah, it was a spooky, cool dream. It was scary and cool at the same time. But it's interesting how, looking back, how much that has fed the theories that I have or matched up with the things theory, that I've read. You know, that it is all one.
Yeah.
Really, if you take a look at it.
Yeah. So, and around that same time, I also had some dreams with Ingrid Cold where I was, that's the period of time when I was really, like our UFO story this week, I was putting it into the cosmos to say, if you want to connect with me,
with me. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
And so several nights I was doing that, and several nights I was having some crazy dreams or experiences or whatever you want to call them. But one of those nights was actually involved Ingrid Cold. And I remember I was, like, standing, our faces were talking to each other, like talking heads almost. And I asked him, like, oh, what is my purpose? And he was like, just continue on your path and you'll figure it out. And then I said, well, what's up with the Grays? And he was like, we needed a way to interface with you all, so we created them.
And it's so much more is coming out about Ingrid Cold. You know, in Tanya's book, she talks about this possibility that Valiant Thor, who is another famous humanoid alien that actually spoke to the Pentagon and all sorts of stuff, which I can't wait to cover Valiant Thor. But it was around that same time he came out. She theorized that Valiant Thor was like the supreme captain of their fleet. But then either the editor or Greenfield, I don't remember which one, I think it was Greenfield, stated that they believe that Ingrid Cold and Valiant Thor may have been one and the same.
One and the same, yeah. I don't know.
It's just nuts, though, man, in a very, very cool way. But, yeah, so we were inundated with dreams about Ingrid Cold. And now, granted, we were reading Keel's books.
Right.
You know, we had already moved on to John Keel. To the Eighth Tower.
Right. I mean, we were saturated in the content, if you will.
Because it fit every missing piece that I had in my brain.
Right.
He had the puzzle piece.
Right.
And not just Mothman prophecies, but moving right into Eighth Tower and already looking into Operation Trojan Horse. I mean, just Keel, it's almost as if I was him in a past life is what it felt like.
Yeah.
Like that, because all those thoughts, the way he speaks, the way he thinks, it fits me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, good Lord, man. It's like, I wish you were still alive. I would love to just have an...
pick your brain for an hour.
15 minutes even, like, just...
Yeah. And it's it's around the same time that we're having all these dreams. I guess it's my rant, or not rant, my stream of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot about that. So that's when, I had reached out into the cosmos for some, connection. This is after watching Hellier, but I think this is definitely before your Ingrid dream, because this is where the whole stream of Mothman was on a cryptid comes from.
Right.
It was like, you know, I got up to get ready for work, and in the shower, and then on the way to work, it's just like all this flood of information, ideas, and whatever was flowing. And at one point in time, I videoed it in the car on the way to work. That's up on YouTube if anybody
hasn't seen it. That's why I'm sad you've been working from home so much,
because
we haven't gotten any videos.
I know. It does seem like the time that I would be driving to and from work, it seems like that would be the most time that I would have these kind of thought explosions, if you will.
Well, and to bring up the pandemic, I hate that it's happening, but it has also aided us, because it has given us the time, because I'm not teaching improv classes, I'm not doing shows, I'm not doing this and I'm not doing that. I'm literally working or was off work for a month and a half and being with my wife and doing this podcast. That's it. That's all I'm doing. And the rest of the time has been filled with research and docs and books.
Yeah.
Whereas before the pandemic, there's no way. I mean, I maybe had a half hour every night to kind of read something. And it did. It took me a minute to read Mothman Prophecies because I just didn't have time.
Yeah.
And now I've read Greenfield's book in like 3 days, right? Yeah. So it's like there's a part of me that hate, you know, of course, will always hate the pandemic, but I'm thankful for it at the same time for the time that it gave me and the ability to see what was important to me.
Yeah.
So, and it also allowed us to find out that me moving to Phoenix is not going to be a problem. We can, because we had to record from separate homes for quite a while.
Exactly. Zoom to the rescue.
Yep.
But yeah, so again, kind of jumping back over to our timeline here. So, so after all of that kind of stuff happened, and so we had our dreams about Ingrid, and then I, you know, I continue to have some really weird dreams with like alien entities and a bunch of different types of alien entities visiting me at the house. And at the time we had decided we were going to try to adopt a dog, and he had to get up and go outside every morning at 6 o'clock in the morning. So one night I had a dream that aliens flew from the forest area behind my house over my house, landed in the field across the street from my house, got out, started walking towards my driveway. A big long line of like military people came and started shooting at the aliens, and the aliens were shooting back. And then I like screamed out, "No!" like this, and they like turned and started shooting at me, and I ran and hid in the tree line. Well, when I woke up from that dream to take my dog out, I'm standing in the backyard. There's no light. My dog is fixated on something standing in the backyard. Like he's just staring at it. And I freak out. I mean, like, I have cold chills all over my body. And I say, "I thought I was ready. I'm not."
Yeah, I remember
like
that.
I verbally said, "I thought I was ready. I'm not. I'll let you know."
Like a freshman with a woman who's been through it before.
I mean, and like, it was funny because after I said that, dog just went on. Like, it was not like there was nothing there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it, and then really, as the pandemic has continued and as lockdown has continued, and as work has continued, because work has been really stressful over the last several months, a lot of that stuff has really dropped off for me. I've still been doing the research and reading the books and watching the shows and all that kind of stuff, and I still have some ideas and comments and theories. But, like, I haven't really been able to reconnect.
Well, lockdown or not, you still had a huge work project that consumed you.
Even if I was going into the office every day, it still probably would have distracted me from being able to engage that way.
Yeah. And so what's interesting is legit COVID lockdown starts at this point. Like, at that point, it was like, please stay inside, yada, yada, yada. Yeah. Then it was like, do not go anywhere.
Right.
But somehow we convinced our wives to let us do a thing. And that's when we went out to Waverly Park. I was like, we had wanted to do it anyways. We wanted to go out there. We wanted to do an Estes session out there.
Right.
And so somehow we were able to convince our wives to let us. It was kind of the last time for a while.
Yeah.
But we went out there, and that's where I unintentionally channeled during
something.
Estes message and method. And we do. We have this on audio.
We do, but it's really hard to listen to because this was the time when we thought, what if we do a double Estes?
What if we do double Estes to see if we talk to each other?
Do we talk to each other? which was chaos. Was chaos. But it was really interesting. I almost feel like listening to it that it was like it was really the opposite. It was I was talking to two entities that were talking to each other, and you were talking to two entities that were talking to each other, but we weren't really talking to each other. You know what I'm saying? Because it really feels like in going back and trying to single out your conversation, it would be like there would be an entity that would ask a question or say a statement, and then you would like channel some voice that would give a response.
Yeah, and it's interesting because something that came up was Malkeith.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course we looked it up. We can't find any star or anything like that. And then I just now sitting here thinking, I'm like, why were we looking up? Why would we assume it would have an Earth name attached to it? You know, like when the star to us could just be A27.3.
Right.
Right. But to them, it's called Malkuth.
Well, and it really, I got the sense, and I'm trying to remember the, actually listening to the audio from it, but it was very much a, I'm going to rule you type situation.
Yeah, it was listening to it myself too. It scared me because it was two entities and it felt like one light, which was a representation of myself, and then one that was dark.
Yeah.
And it would speak in the middle of the other one's sentence. Like
yeah.
It was
just very odd.
And it's come back once in another Estes session.
The one from a few weeks ago when we didn't record.
Yeah.
And we saw our UFOs. It came up there a couple times.
But to flip it back, that night not only did that happen, but that's when I just decided to look through the sunroof
and
I saw a damn UFO. And I'm like, Josh, do you see that? And you were like, yes. And so we get out of the car.
And we see 11 more.
Yeah, we see 11 more. We watch it disappear above us. And so we check the timing because at the same time coming from the cross direction was the space station.
Yeah.
So we saw the ISS go by, so we were able to reference the exact time with, because we're like, oh, Starlink is there. Everybody's like, oh, it's probably Starlink. It was not Starlink. It was in a similar direction.
But it was too high in the sky.
It was too high in the sky, and B, it was like 10 minutes later than when it was supposed to be done. And it disappeared at the top of the horizon, or at the top of the sky. It did not complete. It disappeared as if a ship was going inside some sort of cloaked mothership.
Well, and what's really interesting is I have seen Starlink since, and I can track it all the way across the sky. Like it doesn't disappear unless it goes behind a cloud.
Yeah, just or I looked at Starlink while we were in Michigan. I showed my nephew and we watched. We only saw two because I think we caught the tail end of it. But yeah, we watched it track across the entire sky.
This was not that.
And then not only that, so we saw 11. So 10 of them were in that direction.
It was nine.
Or nine there. That's right. And then
two more.
Two more, but came at a different direction.
And like at a different angle.
Yeah, at a different angle. Came from the similar area.
Right.
But at a completely different angle. Starlink does not come at different angles.
Yeah.
And the theory that we came up with was this idea that they are using satellites. They are using Starlink to cloak themselves, much like they did with Capella.
Again,
to follow behind.
Hiding in plain sight. Yeah.
Wouldn't you follow this train that they know people are going to see in the sky as just a light? They can follow behind it? Because who's going? I mean, yes, there are nerds out there that go, there are only exactly 9 cars on the Starlink train. Nobody really knows, so it's not like... it's fascinating to me. And
and those same nerds, by the way, that would say that, they would probably say that it's not really a train because,
yeah, you obviously haven't seen Space Train Yamato or whatever that that anime is. But that was intense because the Capella one, we still felt like we could talk it off.
Yeah.
But it was like that one... I mean, we both saw it plain as day. We both saw them disappear. We saw the other two come from a different direction. We saw the International Space Station so that we could coordinate and check times for exact moments. And we had this proof. And for days, I think we were both dumbfounded. And I know we still even tried to dispute it,
which is what we do. I mean, we tried to argue against ourselves, right? We tried to look up a reason or what it could be. And frankly, we weren't able to find anything. It was not identified. Therefore, it was a unidentified flying object.
Yep. It was some unidentified aerial phenomenon, a UAP. So I've just made up.
Okay. Yeah, you made it up.
But I know that started.
Yeah, so.
That started, don't mind the pun here, but a train of UFO sightings
and
the both of us.
And each one getting more and more. Intense. That's the right word.
Yeah, that's exactly the word I was thinking of.
So did I push it into your brain? I don't know.
Maybe.
Fast forward, I guess, a few weeks. Again, somehow we had convinced our wives for us to be able to have a bonfire.
Yeah, we decided, because we were going to social distance, which we did, and we did two Fearscape Unhinged episodes outside by a bonfire.
Yep. Roast some hot dogs.
Yeah, roasted weenies.
but did that out by the fire. And that night, we had, again, some great Estes sessions. Mm-hmm. We did some outside. We did some inside. We also, I think, saw several UFOs that night.
Yeah, at least three that I can... Well, I know for a fact I saw three. The very, very first one that we saw was blinking when I would shoot my laser pointer.
No, that was later.
Oh, that was later?
That was what you're talking about is just a few weeks ago. I'm talking about the first bonfire.
Oh, we Lord, saw some. It's all coming together. You're going to have to remind me.
No, yeah, so the first...
Oh, that's the night the moon was out, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, I did merge those two together.
Yep. And that also might have been the same night that the cloud stuttered.
Yes, that's the night that the cloud stuttered is when the moon was out.
Yeah.
I do remember that because it was a bright... So we were like, man, we finally got out here and the moon's it's super bright.
Yeah.
But yeah, we saw that one above the tree... that went up that way.
Yep.
I do remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and we also looked for Capella again because it was out that night.
Yeah.
And it didn't behave the way that it had behaved before.
No, it did not.
So again, it's more like it was, it had served its purpose. Mm-hmm. It had gotten our attention. And you know, in between that time, we also interviewed Andrea Perron.
Oh my God. Yes. I'm so caught up in the UFO stuff that I forgot about the UFO stuff.
So
here's Andrea Perron, who we think is going to be a paranormal
ghost
thing because of, you know, her story was made popular in the Conjuring movie,
right?
Her and her family. And so it turns out to barely talk about that. In fact, she wrote a book about ETs.
Right. So, I mean, and then a lot of the stuff that she is saying in our interview is just syncing up with everything that we've been thinking at the time.
Everything. It was like a plugged drain that she just pulled the plug on.
Right.
Like all of a sudden, it just took me to where I needed to go. Yeah.
And so one of the things that she said when she was on is that they make themselves known to you to let you, you know, like to mm-hmm. because you're ready to see them.
She told us about they love when you sing to them.
Right.
So we sang to them, all sorts of stuff. And she's become a great friend. Yeah. And it sucks because we were supposed to meet her, but the pandemic caused the shows where she was going to be at to be canceled. But yeah, and it was just like her like coming on and then talking to Santiago. And it was just like all these guests that we had were all kind of on this. They were on this, which is so weird because it's like every guest we had, because Keith got them for us, we're all paranormal ghost hunters, yet it always led to this UT or ET conversation.
Right. And it's really, so I'm going to say I myself have recently been looking into numerology and how it can help tell you things about your life and all of that kind of stuff. And one of the things that I found about myself based on the numerology application, if you will, is that I am the type of personality that I will immediately synchronize with whoever I'm speaking with, and they will, for some, you know, for whatever reason, find themselves just immediately my friend.
Yeah.
And that's what it really feels like. Every guest that we've had on the show has immediately been our friend.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Andrea is the first perfect example of that. Keith Age now has been on our show, what, 3-4 times?
That's right.
I mean, and he has been our paranormal papa. I mean, he has been so amazing to us, and we've become such good friends with him, and he's hooked us up with so many great people. We were able to get Andrea. We became Santiago was so great, man, in his hi-ya movement, and then talking to Mary Dees Hampton and just all these people.
You know, Tori Smith with the Paranormal Help
Desk. Tori, and even Santosh.
Todd Bonner.
Joe all these,
Perdue. I mean, just
all these just connections, and then how, like even talking to Joe, like the synchronicities there, that he's friends with a friend that I'm friends with that I met in Seattle.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like just, it's just insane. And every person we've talked to has been an intense connection. I mean, even Mary Dees Hampton. I mean, here's a person who I thought had done a million podcasts. We were her first.
Right.
And we connected with her so
quickly.
Yep. And it's just, it's been that way for everybody.
Vashti Hooper.
Oh, Vashti. Oh, I love you. I haven't even talked about you yet. Good Lord.
But I mean, that was just amazing. That whole interview was, I mean, every, I'll say it this way. Every interview that we've done has been probably entertaining for our listeners. Mm-hmm. But it has been, it has furthered our personal growth.
Yes, it has been very insightful and mind-blowing
yeah.
for us and has led to other avenues
yeah.
like of research and thoughts and theories.
Continuation.
And hypotheses.
Just, like, just a continuation of the path, the journey. So, because I know we're running a little long here, so but I wanted, so the stuff at work got crazy. You had a couple things going on. We still, of course, were recording the show, but nothing really, like, it seems like a lot of activity really dropped off as it pertains to this stuff, right?
Right.
Then we had another, I don't want to call it a bonfire because it was like four logs, but we had another fire out in the backyard.
Yes. I totally snatched a log from your neighbor. They don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, they don't know. But, in that night, was when you had the laser pointer. And that night was two of the most profound Estes methods
yes.
that we've ever had, which we didn't record, which we decided that night that we were recording every single one from here on out.
Yes, and we needed to write down every experience yeah. we have because that night we also had two of the most profound UFO sightings.
Yeah.
Whereas I had three, and you may have had three as well, because I had one while you were under the Estes session. But yeah, I mean, it's like I had my laser pointer, and I had it that first night, but it wasn't really doing anything.
No.
But that night we see something moving, and so I'm like...
For those who maybe can visualize... in the sky, about maybe 25 to 30 degrees above the horizon, moving from south to north, because that's the situation of the way my property is situated. So from south to north, about 25 or 30 degrees above the horizon, is this light that's really bright. And it's, for those who might be thinking, you know, it's the nighttime, it's a bright light, it's clearly an airplane headlight. No, because... Mm-hmm. Airplane headlights are bright when you're looking at them.
Yeah.
But this was moving horizontally from our perspective.
It was moving horizontally. It was not a lightning bug, as we were able to see it consistently.
And it was also white. Most lightning bugs are
green. Yeah. So I have my big, giant laser pointer that I got from Wish.com for $1. And this thing can hit Jupiter's storm. this thing's high-powered. It can hit the bottom of the clouds, everything. So I'm like... We were very, very certain it was not a plane.
Yep.
So I flashed at it. I blinked it twice. It blinked twice.
It blinked back.
And I was like, wait, what?
But it was still moving across the horizon.
Still moving across the horizon.
But it blinked back.
It blinked back.
Every time you would hit it with the pointer, it would respond.
And I did it at random intervals on purpose.
Yep.
I did it at random intervals. And trust me when I say my hand is shaky. I was not hitting this thing directly as if it was a satellite and just reflecting back to me what I did.
It was definitely, I mean, you were all over the place.
Yeah, I was all over the place. And there's no way that small little laser pointer would have a brighter, because, I mean, it blinked big.
Right.
And like if I would blink three times, it would blink three times.
I mean, imagine, if you will, having shining just like a handheld flashlight, and then... When you responded, it became a spotlight.
Yeah.
I mean, it was that big.
It was that big. And it was just like anytime we lost sight of it, because it was, you know, not very, very bright when it wasn't blinking, I just had to blink in the general direction and it would blink and we'd find it.
Right.
We knew right where it was.
To me, it almost felt like a lighthouse.
Yeah.
Like it would go dark, you know, it would almost like circle around and it would get bright and then it would go dark and it would but it wasn't a timed interval.
Yeah, there
like
was
this.
No there was it was random and it would only happen when I did it. And that's what made it so remarkable was that we were able to test
interact.
It. Yeah, we were interacting and testing it.
Yeah.
And even like after it went behind the trees in the house and we didn't really kind of know,
yeah,
I flashed again over in that direction and right, by golly, that's where it was.
Yeah. I mean, we tracked it until it was, you know, behind.
Right. And we did research. We checked satellite positions and things like that. Yep. There was nothing. Because we've got everything. We've got satellite yeah, trackers, star trackers. We've got it all because we want to double check.
But, I mean, yeah, there was nothing in the sky that night. And honestly, this was not – I've seen the lights that are really high that could be disputed as satellites. Right. This was not that. This was more probably closer to, like, maybe – 5 or 10,000 feet elevation.
Yeah,
I mean, and it was not.
And like I said, I did the research, checked the dates and the times, and there was nothing in that area that fit. That there was nothing. There was literally nothing that moved.
Yeah,
there was no satellites that crossed that path and those in that area. I mean, it was just.
So then we did, after we saw that, we decided to do a couple of Estes sessions. The one that that you were under for. The theme, if you will, was Son of Zeus.
It Son of Zeus, yeah. And that I also accidentally channeled again during
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you did. And then the one that came up when I was doing it, I don't remember. But I remember you saying something, are you here? And then it was like saying it was behind you, and then you heard a rustle in the...
yeah, I heard a rustle in the woods, and then I was like, show me, and you were like, north, or something like that, and I look in that direction, and I see another UFO.
Yeah.
Or a satellite, I don't know.
But whatever.
But it showed, you told me where to look, and I saw it, and it moved, and I watched it until it disappeared, like it did with the ones we saw at Waverly Hills. It just all after it saw it, it just blinked out. It was gone.
Well, and then at one point in time when you were doing yours, you said airplane, and I said, is there an airplane coming? And then you said yes, and then I said, well, I don't see anything. And you said, wait for it. And then like 20 seconds later, an airplane flew by.
It was crazy, yeah, man.
So, again, some of the most profound Estes sessions. Then
the big one.
The big one. So, like, we were just kind of standing there, still kind of watching the sky where we had seen the others. I don't remember which one of us turned.
It was me. Because we were sitting there, and my neck was hurting, so I leaned my head back, and I look behind us over to the left, and I see a big bright light, which I think is an airplane. And
but
I'm
I
like,
mean, it was low in
it
the sky.
It was way too low, and I was like, shut up. And there was no noise. And where that would have been, if that was a helicopter or an airplane, just at that point, would have made a noise.
Yeah. I mean, helicopters do. So I'm like a mile from the river, and helicopters do fly by, and I hear them. But that's the thing. With a helicopter and an airplane, at least where I am in my experience, because I do hear them, is you hear them before you see them.
Especially as low as this was. And then you turn around and look, and then it just lights up.
It just lights up, and then it just, like, shoots away.
Yeah.
And then it was gone.
It was gone. I mean, it got so...
Yeah.
I want to cuss so bad right now, because I want to say it got so freaking bright.
Yeah.
Like a softball bright. As like, that's how big it was in the sky.
I mean,
sky. It was
probably like a quarter of the moon bright in the sky.
To where it was, you know, just maybe a tenth or fifteenth of the moon before, that we're just watching it, and then it just expands into this bright light, and then starts to shrink and shoots off.
It shoots off.
Yep. We were just like...
And so, you know, and then I've had the thought after that night that it was the same thing that we had tracked before coming back to investigate.
Well, and you had said at one point, you were like, oh, I kept waiting for... Before that happened, you were like, oh, I kept thinking this thing was going to come back around.
Yeah.
And then, so maybe it did.
Maybe it did. So I mean, you know, I'm having the dreams again. So, I mean, that pretty much catches us up to where we are today. But as you can kind of tell, if you kind of track the intensity of where we started to where we are now, every time we are, I mean, so... The dream, then the you know, then the helping them cross over, and then, you know, then we start to see some UFOs that could be considered, you know, somebody could argue that it's a play of our eyes, or that somebody could argue that it's the satellites, to now a UFO that is actually we've engaged with, mm-hmm. and has like presented itself to us. And so July 11th is the next time that we're getting together for some cool stuff. And I am really looking forward to see what happens on that date.
Well, let me tell you, we can share our announcement now. Yep. Because this is part of all that synchronicity. It's, you know, we talked that a lot of this happened after we watched Hellier and we did our Hellier episode. Well, that was ages ago. I mean, that was like November, December.
Yeah, months ago.
You know, months ago. I was still living in Indiana.
Yeah.
And, like, I get done reading Alan Greenfield's book. I just finished it. And the very next day, we get an email from Alan Greenfield.
Yeah.
Out of the blue.
Right.
Who said that he discovered our podcast and loved the Hellier episode and loved the podcast. And that's all he wanted to say.
Yeah.
That was it. He was just like, just wanted to say, cool, cool, ka-choo, and then answered some theory that we had talked about
right
during Hellier.
Well, it was because we had talked about not being able to find his book and finding some really expensive copy on eBay. And so he gave us the link to actually pick up the complete secret cipher.
Right, which is what we all have, including Santosh now, yeah, and I've finished that as well. But I was like, we need to see if he wants to be on the show.
Right.
And immediately he said yes.
Yeah.
And we have been conversing with him for the past few weeks, which is why I'm sure he's been in my dreams. And then he's showing up in all these books I'm reading. Like like I said, his name is in Beyond Lanulos.
Yeah.
Like, because it talks about him catching a picture of Demo, like in the 60s, right? And just like, and then he, of course, he talks about Keel. He knows Keel.
Yeah.
Or he knew Keel, excuse me. And it just, the synchronicity that here is this author who we have already started obsessing over.
Right.
Because this all led to my rejuvenation of the occult and finding out how it ties in with ufology and ultra-terrestrials and now organizations like the Templars and the Freemasons.
Yeah.
And just seeing how this is. And I got a little something else I got to tell you about here in a second. And all of that, and then having I've dreamed about him like three times over the past 2 weeks. I'm seeing him everywhere. You know, and there's theories out there that he is, you know, that he may be terrorist. And then there's others that say he might be Indrid Cold, right?
I don't agree with either one of those.
I know you don't, but regardless, reading and the things that he was into, the OTO, Golden Dawn, and all those things, that's type of magic that could make things possible. And, you know, there are people that think he is the one that's pulling the strings of the Hellier.
Yeah.
Tyler Strands. But anyway, so yeah, we're going to have him on in 2 weeks. So not only are we meeting to hang out and, you know, look at the sky and stuff like that, is we're meeting with him at night.
Right.
To record an episode or two
with
him, which I am fascinated and just cannot wait. So what I wanted to tell you about before you expand on that, just a quick information. I've started watching the new Unsolved Mysteries. And it's really interesting because they do just a full episode on one thing. Well, the very, very first episode is a missing persons case. Towards the very end of the episode, they drop this 3-minute thing that I was like, I need y'all to get in touch with Alan Greenfield because he'll solve this whole thing. They find this note that he wrote. Well, supposedly that he had wrote.
Who he?
The man that went missing.
Okay.
It was like hidden behind a toilet and it was all typed up and it had all these different names of like celebrities, but it was like laid out a certain way and went all this stuff. And then they said that they had found all these books on Freemasonry and all this stuff. And here I am reading this book where Greenfield's talking about the Freemasons and the secret cipher that they use that more than anybody in anything. And there was like this loose thing where somebody had joked that all this random chaos stuff was probably some sort of code. And then they moved on. And I'm like, I literally just the day before finished his book where they were talking about the Freemasons using this cipher and using code to speak. And here it is right there.
I have a letter.
And the Unsolved Mysteries, they're saying it looks like just a bunch of chaos, but yet we found these Freemason books. I don't know. And I'm sitting there like, I'm going to call, but y'all are going to think I'm crazy. I'm going to be like, y'all need to contact Alan Greenfield, get on his secret cipher. He can figure this out for you and we'll find him.
Or just, you know, maybe give us the letter.
Or he died. I don't remember which. But
still.
There's information in there. And it was just like, again, the synchronicities.
Right.
Like, this is the first time I've ever heard about the Freemasons using a cipher and using a code that was similar to what Crowley was using and the Kabbalah and all of this stuff. And then here it is.
Right.
A quick 3-minute segment of this episode that just got washed. It was like the producer was like, I don't know, we need 2 more minutes. Can we throw in the Freemason crap? And that was, to me, I was like, we can figure this out.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, yeah, so we've got Greenfield coming on, yep. And it's, I'm just like, I wanna, like, I'm judging everything now. How he spelled his name in earlier publications, how he has, like, spaces in between things, how there's different fonts in his book, like, everything. I'm like, I know it's a code, AG.
This sentence has a misused word. You know, it must be a code.
Well, and that's the thing, because Terry Rist's stuff did too. And in Hellier, you know, the email that Terry sent and all that had these weird spacings and things like that. Well, then here's his book and it has those similar spacings. And like, that's where that idea that they're one and the same. But to me, that just says they come from the same background. Right.
Or maybe AG has some bad publishers.
That's also true. I don't know, but I feel like he's the type of guy that does it on purpose. Like that there is a meaning. Not all of it, because there are some weird things where where there's like text and then there's a picture and it's like over the picture. I'm like, that was an accident. But you know, other things, like there are just some things that I've seen that seem very, very intentional.
So,
or that's part of his mystique. He wants you to think that. He just puts extra spaces to be like,
I'm going to mess with these guys.
I don't know. Regardless, I'm so excited and scared and nervous. I've never been so nervous to talk to a guest before.
Really?
Just because I've immersed myself in his book, and that complete cipher just added, the second half of that book just really fed more of that, and I've kind of become a little bit of a fanboy, and like I'm trying to seek some of his other books just to keep. I like his writing style.
Well, and Alan, if you happen to listen to this episode, don't be afraid. You know, Stefan's not going to track you down or anything.
No, not yet. No. But yeah, that's what's funny. That's why we said this is the journey, and look where it's led to. And I already know it doesn't matter. Every guest we've had has opened a door. And we're about to interview the guy that has created the lock to the door, right?
Yeah. Or at least figured out the key to the lock.
The combination, right? It's like, I'm just so pumped to see. That's why I thought I agreed with you. This was the perfect time to share where we are. Because I think after this,
well,
it's getting bigger.
Well, we've got, you know, we've got the Alan Greenfield interview. Mm-hmm. Later in July, we're going to Point Pleasant.
Oh, yeah, we are. You, me, and Santosh, we're going to Point Pleasant. We're going to meet up with Joe, and we're going to, like, look for UFOs.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's coming over the next month. And also in that numerology stuff, you know, I found out that July is the best month for me, and any day that is a duplicate number, so, like, the 11th, is a good day for me. And so we're interviewing Alan on July 11th. So right.
And then your birthday is April 11th.
August
11th. And then we have another guest next week. We've got we're going to have Wayne. Oh, I'm sorry, Wayne, I forgot your last name. But Wayne, he's part of a Bigfoot investigations up just across the bridge that Joe introduced us to.
Right.
We're going to have him on next month. I mean, it's like, we got some cool stuff coming up.
Yep.
And we have, thank you guys so much, because we have seen our numbers double and triple in terms of like listeners. I mean, every day I check the numbers and they grow, and it's just so thankful and fascinating. We could not have done any of this without you guys. And I'm just glad you give a shit about what we're saying, because our families don't.
So I think that pretty much catches everybody up to where our journey is so far. And I'm sure, like I said, everything seems to Everything definitely seems to expand on the previous thing. And so it's kind of like, I think it's Moore's Law when it talks about technology, that every 2 years, technology will double on itself. Mm-hmm. And that's what I really feel like with what we're going through. It's like every time it occurs, it's not just a step up. It's like almost a double up of what it was the last time.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we didn't even mention this, but even the John Teeter episodes has opened our eyes to time and right. space and time travel where we weren't expecting to.
Right.
Even the research that we're finding is changing what we're deciding on researching. It's one of the reasons we don't release our schedule a lot ahead right. of time, because a lot of times that changes.
It shifts.
Yeah. Based off of, we're like, oh crap, we need to talk about this.
Yeah.
but I want to start wrapping up. I want to get out of here. I hate to, but I think we've ran the gamut on our timeline here. Again, thank you guys so much for tuning in and listening. I want to quickly get to our listener story and get this out of the way, just because it's a good one and I don't want to lose it. But this one comes from a woman named Heather from Kentucky. And this listener story is portrayed by another good friend of mine. Her name is Kate Kane Bewley. She is the bomb diggity. She is a good friend and improviser. But this story is kind of an interesting one. So let's go ahead and check that one out.
Hey, Stephen. Hey, Josh. I'm Heather. I'm from Kentucky. And I want to tell you a true story that still gives me a weird feeling when I think about it. When my husband was 19, he lived in an old plantation house on Tuckahoe Road in Mason County, Kentucky. There was a well in front of the house, and about a half a mile behind the house was the family cemetery. And I remember my first day there, it was so hot. It was so hot that day. And he was showing me around the inside of the house. I mean, it was a plantation. It was really cool, and there was a lot to see. But again, it was hot outside. But inside, it was really cold, which I thought was strange. So we went down in the coal cellar, and there were chains hanging on the wall where they once kept their slaves. The plantation used to be active, so they had slaves, and when they got in trouble, they'd bring them in here, and I guess they used those chains. Anyways, then this is where the crazy started. After we left the cellar, he went to show me the cemetery. If you could imagine, like a hot, dry day, no wind blowing. As we walked closer to the cemetery, though, the wind began to pick up, and it started to cool off. By the time we got there, the wind had picked up so much, and I swear I could hear those chains just rattling off in the distance. There was a headstone that said children had fallen in the well, and that was placed there to memorialize them. So between the chains and the headstone and the wind blowing so much, we decided we just left. Each time I went out there, something strange would happen. I've always thought it was just me until I ran into other people that lived in the house that had stories of their own. I guess a few years back, they tore down that house and built a new one. To this day, when we go riding the back roads, I think about that house, and it still gives me chills when driving by the property.
So, yeah, thank you, Heather, for sending that in to us.
To be way out in the field and still hear the chains rattling back at the house.
I know. Well, and they shouldn't have been rattling. There was no windows down right. there. That was the whole thing.
It was a cellar, so it could have, like, my grandparents' house is built, that they grew up in was in 1825.
Right.
And its cellar had like the big, you know, double pull open doors.
Right.
You know, it was like, it didn't have, it's not like a basement in the house.
Yeah, it's a coal cellar.
Right. And so, you know, yes, it didn't have windows, but it also could have been it was drafty.
Sure, because she didn't say where she entered the basement at.
No.
I mean, it could have been like Dorothy
right.
and
them. And if it's an older house, if it's like a plantation type house.
But still, she said it was like a quarter of a mile away,
right.
which is where the cemetery
was. It would have to be like really drafty to bang those chains around on the bricks in order to make enough sound for her to hear it.
Right. But I mean, you talk about some classic paranormal stuff happening is that it's a super hot day. She enters the house and it's freezing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, yes, those old houses were built to move air better because they didn't have air conditioning, right. But not to that point where it's freezing. Yeah. And then she gets out there, she gets freezing again, and they see that memorial to the kids with that had perished in the well and just that wind. I mean, it was enough to scare her away from there. And then to meet someone else that lived there was like, oh, hell no. And she still gets chills when she drives by the area.
Right. Well, because they built that other house on top.
Yeah, on top. So.
So, I mean, it's just. Whoever decided to live in that house, you know.
yeah, I don't know. But again, thank you, Heather, for sending that in to us. Please, please, please. We have been getting some more via email, and we're so thankful for that. Send your listener stories into fearscapepodcast@gmail.com or even on our website. They can do that, right?
Yep. So on our website now, there's a report a sighting form. And it doesn't have to be, you know, it could be UFO, it could be cryptid, it could be ghost, whatever. You just kind of fill it out, fill in your, you know, whatever you can remember, whatever you want to provide. And there's even a box for you to say if you want to remain anonymous.
Yes. Yeah. And you can put on there, say, hey, I would like to send this in as a listener story. If you're, you know, really want to make sure we see it as such to let us know, hey, this isn't a recent report. Maybe this is something happened to you when you were a kid. Yeah. It's just another platform for you to share your listener stories. Or like we said. We're trying to collect sightings of paranormal things, UFOs, cryptids, ghosts, all of the above. We want to collect those. You can get onto our new Socialscape there and interact with other people that are on there on message boards, create a message board. Our website is really taking off, and we're very, very excited about it. And, of course, you guys know you can get T-shirts on there and all the good links to the social media and all that stuff. All that's at fearscapepodcast.com. Make sure to check it out. But, Josh, unless there's anything else.
Not right now, but I'm looking forward to the next 6 months.
Oh, me too, man. I am too. Thank you guys so much for tuning in and listening to Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. We love you guys so much. This has been Stefan, and I will catch you on the flip side.
This has been Josh. The truth is out there.
And remember, folks, hold those blankets extra tight because things tend to get spooky when you listen to Fearscape. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
I'm so glad you were able to join us for that horrifying discussion. I hope they didn't frighten you too much. Tune in next week for even more research into the nightmarish and haunting creeps and spooks that we tell ourselves don't exist, but we know they do. Make sure you have your blankets, that you hold them extra tight. Next time on Fearscape.
'Hey, blanket huggers. Stefan here from Fearscape Paranormal Podcast, and do we have a scary good deal for you right now. If you head over to fearscapepodcast.com/gamefly, you can get a 30-day free trial Gamefly subscription on us. Now, if you're not familiar with Gamefly, it's a game and movie rental service where you can play the hottest video games for systems like the Nintendo Switch, Xbox One, or even the PS4. You can get up to 2 games or movies out at a time, and you can do that an unlimited amount of times a month. Josh and I love to play our game systems, and I am really enjoying the Final Fantasy VII Remake right now. And if you're like me, games are too expensive to buy and beat in the same weekend. Well, with Gamefly, you can get it and keep a game as long as you need. Then you just send it back and get the next game on your list. So head on over to fearscapepodcast.com/gamefly today and give it a try.